From the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Don't mind me. I'm just trying to make my always on top thing stay on top of something, and it doesn't do it. It's just a geeky thing, and I'm lucky I just don't even hurt myself. Good morning. It is June 13th, 2018. This is Patrick Timpone, and this is the real world of money. Real world of money. So Andrew Goss, I was thinking I should just invent an app for something, and then then you could just sit around and drink little drinks with more, umbrellas in them or something like that. I mean, there's got to be an app to somebody.
There's an app for that.
You think there's an app for that?
Yeah. One that makes umbrella drinks, I think.
Yeah. And I'm thinking there'd be a lot of cool apps that you could do for people interested in your health. I think there's something there. I should work on that. Talk to some geeks, spit here, could you actually spit into a smartphone and get information, or like DNA gene thing? I mean,
that's a good question.
That's the kind of apps I've been thinking about. I said, just spit in your smartphone.
I've thought about the breathalyzer one.
There you go.
Night drunk drivers.
Yeah, breathe in this little guy and see if you should drive or not.
Yeah,
that's
so,
a good one.
Yeah, I see the input port at the bottom, so I guess you would need like a plug-in type of a thing that you...
Oh yeah, you probably have to USB it into your computer.
Right, exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Get a geek. You definitely need a geek. Although finding one today is going to be exceedingly hard, Patrick.
Because I know.
Oh my goodness! If you're a geek and you don't have a job, there's something wrong.
Unemployment is like... What is it?
Lowest ever? I don't know. 1975, I think you have to go back to find out. I think the first time in 30 years that there
it's been
more,
that low.
Yeah, more jobs than people.
But see, I don't think that's a good thing, because I heard Robert De Niro call president.
Yeah, I heard it too.
Did you see that thing?
Man, what a tirade.
I wrote a letter to Tribeca Production Company, which Robert De Niro owns.
Mm-hmm.
I did.
Yeah, good for you.
I wrote him a letter.
And I think a lot of other people did as well.
And I said, you know what? This guy is crazy. This guy is absurd. He's a great actor, but he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And I'm not watching any more of his movies. Thank you very much.
Well, that's all I watch is his movies.
I'm not going to even do that anymore.
Yeah, I get it.
I'm not
going to
support these people because they're bonkers, man. Come on. I mean, even if they were right, right? Even if they were right, you don't talk about the president like that. I mean,
rough.
I'm saying.
It was rough.
Right.
But if you're going to send Robert De Niro a letter, I would guess only two would do the job, the same two that he sent the president, F you. Here you go, Robert.
I can't believe he did that.
Well, here's what
I try not to
get my political advice from actors, because...
You think?
One thing I've learned about acting is you're acting. And the outrage is great. I get that he's outraged, but there's so many productive things that he could do. And the one that really upset me, though, was Bill Mayer, whatever the heck his name is, from HBO, that said, pray for a recession.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Pray for a recession, because that's, that'll stop him.
Hmm.
So he prays that Americans are going to be out of work and suffering. How could you do that?
Have you ever seen anything like this in your lifetime?
I disliked President Obama. I really did.
Sure.
I disliked George Bush. But I never wished nasty on the country just so he would fail.
Wish nasty.
That's what he did. He's wishing, recession on his fellow Americans. That's a horrid thing to do, I think. Well, both of them, they should really console each other. I believe these folks still think that they're getting rid of this guy. And I don't believe it's going to happen. He's going to earn his peace prize one way or the other.
So even if the Dems would get a lot of seats in November,
I don't see it. I do not see it.
I don't see it either, but they
in
also
In my
would.
South Carolina, we tossed Mark Sanford out. You know, probably
Is
one of the
right?
most well-known names in the state lost the primary.
Really?
He lost the primary. And here in New Jersey in the 5th District where Josh Gottheimer beat Scott Garrett, I see a Republican wave putting him out and re-electing or electing for the first time. John McCain has and I have had discussions about the monetary system. He gets the Jackson painting still hanging in Trump's Oval Office.
John McCain.
He's the Republican candidate for the 5th District of New Jersey. He's going to win in the fall. He is a wonderful guy.
And you guys are bluer than blue up there.
Yeah.
Right, blue states up there.
But this 5th District is, you know, in the upper right corner of New Jersey.
So I guess the big question is this nationalist the
globalist
personal responsibility, all people are created equal stuff that the globalist lefties just, you know, have a, you know, this is their model. I guess the question is who shows up and who, you know, are there more of them on the globalist or are the nationalists, right? I guess that's the whole picture, right, isn't it?
Well, I'll tell you what is really heartening to me is that everybody and their brother is now comparing Trump to Jackson, right? He's
Andrew Jackson,
yeah. So that really shows you the mindset.
Can you explain to us how the tentacles of the giant squid of the globalist have got to where they are? I mean, can give us a little background there.
Well, through the Alexander Hamilton way, which is involve everyone. So if you look at the records of the 1828 Congress, you'll find that the majority of Congress, both sides of the aisle, was taking donations from the owners of the central bank. That only it was so blatant then. I mean, everyone, Henry Clay, Daniel Webster, all of them, they were all on the payroll of the Bank of the United States. And so naturally, anything that they were told to say or to oppose or to do, that's what they did. That was their, well, and here we are once again.
Yeah.
If you look at the federal election campaign reports, you'll see that once again, both sides of the aisle are funded in large part by the central banks, the owners of the central banks, and their lobbyists and their lawyers and so forth. And the seat that we were just talking about that Scott Garrett used to hold, he held it in 2008, and he and I were on speaking terms. And when we talked about the bailout plan, and I said, no, you got to vote no. You can't give these guys taxpayer money and encourage this sort of behavior. And he said, okay. And then they re-voted, and he voted no, yes, the second time. And his explanation was, can you raise me $200,000? Because they told me that they're going to give the $200,000 that they were going to give me, they're going to give it to my opponent in the primary. So, you know, I can't vote against them. That's the harsh reality. And for a man like Scott Garrett, who is a principled guy of integrity, to bend like that or even break, I thought, we don't speak anymore.
So the multinational corps.
Yeah.
These guys are all friends and golf buddies with the bankers?
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much.
Sure.
I mean, that's just the deal, right?
Yeah.
Just, you know, they go back to the old money.
Yeah. Right. And the idea that banks are going to take your money, pay you 2%, 3%, whatever rate, and then they're going to speculate and gamble with that money. And then, of course, they're going to put their finger on the scale so that that investment pays off. So if they pour a bunch of money into pharmaceutical companies, then they're going to shepherd legislation that benefits those companies. So that's been their model. And Hamilton was the master at it. Involve everyone. So get them in, give them a piece of the pie, let them make some money, and then they'll do what you want them to do. Hmm. So yeah, they're good at it. They've gotten better at it over the last 100-odd years, you know, post-Civil War.
Yeah. One of the big stories this week, and get your take on this, AT&T and the Time Warner deal. That the Gov, the one we love, was against. I guess the Trump administration, and they thought it would be too, it's an $85 billion deal, Wow. And now I've been reading articles saying that this is going to open the door for more.
Oh, yeah.
So we have Comcast.
Comcast.
Fox.
Right away.
Disney. Verizon.
Yeah.
Amazon. One giant
corporation.
Corporation.
With a single viewpoint.
Whoa.
And that's what we'll get. Can you imagine? The left is going to buy Fox. Well, 21st Century Fox. But
who's the left?
Who's the left?
Who's the left? Who's going to buy Fox? I mean, Comcast?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I think a further consolidation in the media is inevitable, and further consolidation in the banks.
But the globalists aren't necessarily lefties. They play both sides.
Well, they most certainly do.
Don't they?
But at the
but
end
right
of the day,
now it's a left
leaning left right paradigm
left leaning thing for the media, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So I pull this one out because I think this is really could be what's going on.
There are no nations. There are no peoples. Right. There are no Russians. There are no Arabs. There are no third worlds. There is no West. There is only one holistic system of systems.
Mm. Mm,
one vast and immense, interwoven, interacting, multivariate, multinational dominion of dollars.
Yes. Yes.
There is no America. There is no democracy.
Oh.
There is only IBM and ITT and AT&T.
Oh, AT&T.
And DuPont, Dow, Union Carbide, and Exxon. Those are the nations of the world today.
Yes.
We no longer live in a world of nations and ideologies, Mr. Beale.
No, it is not.
The world is a college of corporations.
Oh.
Inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business.
Mm-hmm. We're all Swiss.
The world is a business, Mr. Beale.
Yes.
It has been since man crawled out of the slime.
Not personal. It's just business.
That was Patty Chayefsky wrote that on a network in 1970 something.
Yeah, so well it was.
Was he
it was
on
in
it
full,
or what?
Oh, it was in full swing there. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a great movie.
Yeah.
So that's the movie Network. If you'd like to watch that sometime, and Patty Chayefsky wrote that and. Man, he was a visionary, wasn't he? 40,
yes, he
40
was.
40 years ago?
Uh-huh,
50
uh-huh.
years ago to see that?
Yeah.
Isn't that funny?
But when I think about when the seeds of my turmoil began, right around that time, that's about when I started to recognize what was going on as well. So it's been going on for a long time. That was the oil crisis, if you recall.
Right, I remember that in the early 70s when we had gas lines.
Mm-hmm.
And on TV, they said, oh, those Arabs are...
boycotting.
They're boycotting or something.
They're not selling us gas and oil. They're not selling us oil because they don't like our way of life.
So, I mean, can we really see an Orwellian kind of a thing where there's going to be like one or two corporations running the whole show, just like in the movie they predicted? I mean, just one big. What was that other movie? Well, you know which one I mean. Just one big corporation.
Yeah.
Wow.
1984?
No, what's the other one in England and the guy wore the mask and the whole thing?
Oh, V is for Vendetta.
V for Vendetta. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Woo.
Well, the people are...
Can you see that coming? Will we see that in the next 5-10 years?
Well, do I see the Vendetta style? No, I don't think there's enough consciousness to cause people to... You know, they're distracted. So we keep them distracted and controlling and owning the media... is so important, especially in this day of free information. So, yes, I see this. You know, there's a great study, we've talked about it before, the way they did it in the old days, interlocking directorships among the major corporations, where they would have common directors sitting on boards that would pass the word, if you will, from board to board. And now it'll come from the owners of the corporation. Which tentacles will reach everywhere. I mean, I can't see a facet of American business that won't be touched, except small business, perhaps.
So who's making the who made the decision on this AT&T Time Warner thing? Who?
A judge.
A judge. So they have just one guy, depending on his leanings, and that's it?
That's it.
I mean, done?
Can
the Trump administration...
Can they appeal?
Can they appeal?
There's always an avenue for appeal.
Yeah, but this fellow was pretty dogmatic about his ruling, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
He said, no conditions, you just do it.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's cool.
And open the floodgates and let others come right behind him, because this was sort of the test case.
Well, yeah, they were waiting in line to file their things there. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I expect you'll see a Comcast bid in the next couple of days for...
Isn't that kind of weird when you think about it?
Mm-hmm.
Have a company with just a lot of money, mm-hmm. like AT&T or Comcast or Verizon, that these are just geeks that got into the phone business, 20 years ago, right?
Yeah.
And now they're going to be running big media conglomerate. Yeah. Isn't that kind of strange, isn't it?
Yeah, but the originators...
I mean, shouldn't guys like you and me be running these media
companies? No, those originators are pushed out all the time.
What do you mean?
Well... You know, somebody comes up with a good idea and gets some traction under a corporation.
Yeah.
And then the boys sweep in and take over, push him
or
her.
Just come right in and push them all out. So the boys are running these big corps.
By now, maybe not at the beginning. You know, the seeds, the old HP in the garage thing. Yeah, you might have started in the garage, but once you... got some traction and started to influence things, then you have to go. The founders have to go. And they can go quietly, or they sort of like J.P. Morgan and Andrew Carnegie, hate competition. You tell me how much this company's going to cost me. You write it down on a piece of paper and I'll pay it, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I think Carnegie said $100 million, but he could have said $200 million, and they would have ponied it up, because at the end of the day, they have to control it, or otherwise it gets away from them. So,
and generally, when one corp wants to eat up another one, they don't really have a choice, do they, or do they?
Well, you mean like a hostile takeover?
Like this. In other words, it's AT&T, Time Warner. What if Warner didn't want to do it?
Well,
could AT&T still
force them to do it? Yeah,
with enough money, I guess you can, right?
Yeah, that's right. And it doesn't have to be friendly.
So they just buy the stock.
Pretty much.
Or they call up Buffett and say,
you buy the stock, and then call up Joe, and you buy the stock, and then everybody just buy the stock until we control it. That's what they do.
And as Gordon said, greed is good. So you just kind of do it, right?
Yeah.
Just kind of do it. Yeah, that is part. And then when you have on the other end of it, Andrew Goss. People like Facebook now, they're thinking about, they're going to do their own phones. They're going to get into the business as well. Can you imagine?
Sure.
They're going to, they're actually looking at Netflix maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, can you imagine the Zuckerberg owning Netflix? Oh, God help us.
It's content. It's all about content.
God help us.
Yes.
I'm going to go to the mountains, man.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you'll be safe there, Patrick.
Jeez.
So.
I mean, God. I mean, this the content thing is fine. I mean, for guys like you who are going to be making movies, and I want to make them someday. But the people at the top, they don't like your political view in the movie. I mean,
that's it. Your movie's dead.
Your movie's dead. I mean, but I guess there's going to be other ways. I think that the real creative people are going to be able to come up with ways to get their content to folks, aren't they? Beam them into people's heads or something.
I'll tell you where we're going. That's right.
You know what I'm saying?
I signed a deal yesterday with Green Apple Entertainment to put Four Presidents out into the marketplace.
Green Apple Entertainment.
Yeah, a pretty mid-sized distribution company. And I reserved the right to sell DVDs on my own.
Uh-huh.
Which they fought tooth and nail to not give me. But what I've seen in the past is, of course, they lavish a bunch of money on a film and say, here, we want to buy this film. And then they put it in a box and put it on the shelf, and no one ever sees it.
Right. Shows up at the HEB or something.
Yeah. It doesn't even show up there. Like, it doesn't even make it to the bargain bin.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you'll see more and more of that straight-to-the-market type of a thing, self-distribution. More and more folks are going to get their message out around these corporations until they can plug those holes in the dike.
Yeah, and I read somewhere where more and more people watch movies on their phones. That's weird, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, that's weird to me.
Kind of weird.
I mean, you're going from the big screen
to the smallest,
possible screen. That's like, I'm not sure about that one, but. What are you going to do? Patrick Timpone, Andrew Goss, in the Real World of Money. We have lots of time. I have lots of tabs. No telling what we'll talk about. We're going to talk about inflation. We're going to talk about the Fed. We're going to talk about Obamacare, and there was a ruling on that one, and stuff, a lot of stuff. 888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Here's a little guy that's on sale right now if you're interested. We're talking with Daniel Vitalis of Sir Thrival. What's a little history on the elk velvet antler? The idea is to go way back.
It does. Elk antler and deer antler and moose antler and all the antlers of the cervid in their velvet or young stage before they've hardened to full bone have been used as a euthanizing medicine, as a kind of libido enhancing medicine for thousands of years, particularly in Asia. We see this long history in China and then also in Russia as well. It was studied in Cold War Russia as a kind of anabolic supplement for their elite athletes. And that's where we get the base formula that we use at Sir Thrival. Now, we've optimized that formula using organic ingredients and really high quality packaging, but is based on that current, that modern Russian research and all the evidence that came out of that Cold War era.
I think so. There's a reason these elixirs have been around for thousands of years. The proof is in the pudding. Elk Velvet Antler and all Sir Thrival products on sale now through November 7. Promo code ONERADIO.
Oh, forget that.
Click and order. That's a moldy oldie. You don't need a promo code, but it's going on through, I believe, the 21st, which would be the summer solstice. So it's a great sale. You could also then look at the Shaga, the Reishi, colostrum, the vitamin DK2 thing, which is a cool product, and the Taboo, the aphrodisiac, if you want to play kissy face. Those are all on sale, not the colostrum, but the other ones. Okay. And no promo code needed, any Sir Thrival link. We've been offering a pure sulfur for about almost 5 years now, and people really love it. We did a show with Dr. Ulri, and we're gonna put that tape up there, and he talked a great deal about sulfur as well. It's, I think, 30% of the human body is sulfur. Can you believe that? 30%? Yeah, 30%? I mean, I can't even imagine that. Wayne Blakely says that one of the reasons why people are getting depressed, they're having a hard time and they get on these Lexapros and mini pros and mini poos and all the stuff that the docs give them because, you know, they don't feel good is because they're not getting enough sulfur up into their brain, which makes you feel good, which is one of the reasons why when people take sulfur, they feel a little better because it's a natural way. You know, these supplements like we're taking with the sulfur, this is pretty much like the way we are meant to feel, kind of like, you know, a little more clarity and all that. But we've kind of been, you know, with our, you know, modern lifestyle with EMFs and, you know, the food and the stress and whatever, you know, we get a little brain dead. And so this sulfur just kind of brightens things up. People love the product and they just keep ordering. If you'd like to try some, ours is natural and it's pure. I don't know what natural means, but it's pure organic, and which means the body can absorb it, and it's 99.9% pure. I think it's made in the lab. They use DMSO and hydrogen peroxide. The original source of the sulfur is actually pine trees. There's no real sulfur right out there. It goes right to the pine tree to the sulfur. They used to years ago, but oh, the big boys got involved and they put an end to that one. So they make it in a lab now. But it's, you know, it's still living. It'll put little crystals in a glass and you can see it living. It's pretty fun. It just lives, just keeps living. So it's a great product. There's so many things out there. We're learning about the necessity for sulfur and extra sulfur because of the soil and the uptake of the minerals and all that. And it's a great detoxification thing. Yeah. It really helps the body to detox heavy metals. So a lot of benefits. You want to do it about 30 minutes away from other stuff. People are always asking, yeah, I would take it 30 minutes. I would start with a teaspoon twice a day and see how you like it. If you're, you know, over 150, 75 or 200 pounds, you can take more and you really can't take too much. I mean, you just really can't. And it's pure sulfur. Click and order, front page, One Radio Network. If you like more than 4 pounds, email me, Patrick, OneRadioNetwork.com. Do like Andy does. Buy 9 pounds at a time. You get a 9 pounds, you get 15% discount. Did you know that? That's right.
We talk about your health, wealth, and well-being on OneRadioNetwork.com. Once again, here's Patrick.
How's your sulfur supply, Mr. Gosh? You doing all right?
Yeah, I got about 4 pounds left.
4 pounds left, well.
Starting to get a little antsy.
That's right. When you get 2 pounds, like my mom used to say, when I only have a pack of cigarettes in the house, I start to get a little nervous.
Yeah, yeah.
People do that with sulfur.
Sulfur now.
That's right. Well, Andrew Goss, he's a currency historian. He's a nationally recognized one at that. And he's two books, Secret World of Money, Uncle Sam Cooks the Books. Working on his latest book is The Monetary History of the United States. Any kind of things that are really standing out for you as you're putting together this next book? Were there any times in history that you're seeing that things really, I don't know, were the most eventful times in the history?
Monetarily?
Yeah, monetarily. Yeah,
yeah, well, I'll tell you, it was in putting together this book that I, it fleshed out for me four presidents with a little more.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like every time we get close, every time.
To do something, boy.
Yeah, something big, you know?
Yeah, with the
because
money.
Because I would, for me, it's the root of everything. The money system is like, we're $21 trillion in debt.
Yeah.
And it is by this debt that we're sort of ruling the rest of the world, or at least leading them along. So I think paying off the national debt would be a wonderful thing. And the last time, I guess, January 1st, 1835, hey, guess who? Andrew Jackson paid off the national debt.
Well, that's because he took over the Fed, right?
Well, yeah. Well, he abolished them.
I mean, he abolished them.
They were gone. The Second Bank of the U.S., gone. That was his platform. Vote for me and I will kill this bank. And you can read the
Could
political
Could you imagine Donald Trump saying, okay, in 2020, we're going to get rid of the Fed. And here's the way it works, folks, that you don't know. The Fed actually creates the money and we borrow from them. Do you think that's a good idea? Could you imagine him saying that on national television? Do you think they would ever allow it? Would they cut him off?
Well,
I mean,
I wonder what they would do about that. If he just tweets it, you know?
Why are we borrowing money from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York that creates the money? Why don't we just create it ourselves?
Amen.
Could you imagine that?
Sure.
Why doesn't he say that?
I don't know. I know this, though, that Citizens United, you remember that whole...
No.
Okay, that was when the Supreme Court said that corporations are people, too.
Oh, yeah.
So I was proposing campaign finance reform in the early 90s. I don't know if you recall. It was, you remember this? If you can't vote for him/her, you can't give them money.
Right.
I do. It's simple. Just a sentence, right? There's your campaign finance reform. But, you know, instead we got a Supreme Court that said, no, it's okay. Corporate control of the media is going to be allowed. And so you can take your billions and take your corporate money and lobby and do what you want, support who you want, even though corporations might be people too, according to the Supreme Court, they can't vote. And so under my plan, if you can't vote, you can't give them money. That's the end of the story. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court saw it another way and allowed these outside groups, if you will, that can't vote to influence our political decisions. So everybody's talking about the Russians meddling in our elections, but it's really the corporations, the globalists, that are meddling in our elections, and we really need to rein them in.
And the media thing is just so out of control. I mean, when I started in commercial radio in 69, we've mentioned this before, but folks, it's a really interesting lesson in history. You could only own 6 radio or television stations.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, so like if you're in St. Louis, you, for example, if you own the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, own KSD where I worked, I mean, that was it. It's not like you could go out and buy a bunch of other stations. They thought about that, you know. It was important that you had a little variety and, you know, in your content, right? Because people have political. Now, I mean, there's stations, I forget the... Who's the big one that owns 2,000 radio stations?
Clear Channel.
Clear Channel, right. Mm-hmm. 2,000 radio stations.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just, 40 years ago?
Yeah.
But it's a big change, you know. It's a big
change. Sure, 96%.
Big change.
It might be 97 now.
I mean, Clear Channel can pick, you know, whatever, Clint so-and-so song, and he can make him like a billionaire overnight just because they play his record every 15 minutes.
Play.
Yeah, boom, 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 boom. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, you know, real power that, you know, who knows where that takes people. You know, they get weird when they get that much power.
Yep.
You know?
They do.
And people get weird. I mean,
they do.
They get bonkers, man.
And they get upset when their power doesn't work. Then they plot to gain more power. And, you know, what was that Gordon Gekko line? How many yachts do you need
to
water
ski?
How many do you need? Yeah. So, unfortunately, this victory of the people and President Trump has led these globalists to redouble their efforts. And if you can imagine such a thing, like there were already 96% of the media controlled by six corporations.
Is that right? Yeah, I guess that is.
That's what it
96% was. 96% by six corps.
Yeah.
So in about 10 years, it'll be maybe one.
Or two.
Two corps, right?
As I talked about in Secret World of Money back before bank consolidation, you know, there were quite a few banks. Now it seems like there's just going to be a handful of banks, and they're all going to own the other banks. So the monetary system is almost completely compromised.
So will there be a day you won't see a bank of Dripping Springs or a bank of whatever?
Well, if you do.
They do survive, don't they?
If they do,
yeah.
It'll be with strings to some larger organization. Like, it might say Bank of Dripping Springs up on the sign, but when you drill down into the corporate ownership, you'll realize that it's really, you know, Bank of Everybody. That's the trend. Both in, so, you know, like, for we've talked about in the past how Visa and MasterCard appears to be two separate entities, but they're owned by the same people.
Kind of like the euro and the dollar, right?
Yeah.
Kind of, sort of, right.
So it looks like competition, but it isn't. Uh-huh. And, you know, those were the famous words of J.P. Morgan. I hate competition. He hated it with a passion. He liked cooperation. So you're going to set your rate there. Well, then I'm going to set my rate here. And we agree in advance on what things are going to be and how they're going to be done. And there's no ruinous competition. It's only with smaller, hungry entities like the Bank of Dripping Springs that keep the big buds in line. You know, if they're the only ones in the game, then they can pretty much dictate what it's going to cost and how much you're going to be able to do.
What are the markets thinking about the Trump-Kim summit? Anything? Are they reacting in any way? Gold is, you know, nothing. Kind of stable, $12.97.
Mm-hmm.
Market's pretty flat this morning. Let's look at the dollar. After dollar's down a little bit, crude oil is, you know, it's kind of quiet out there.
Sure.
Kind of quiet out there.
Kind of quiet.
You think he was successful over there, Mr. Trump, in the Kim thing?
I do. You know, I see this as a, here's a 36-year-old.
Is he 36?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, he's half Trump's age. Mm-hmm. He needed a father figure. Mm. I think he found one.
Don't you think it was hilarious where he showed him pictures of the beach and all that, and Donald Trump was saying, you know, you guys could have hotels out there. And he was going like, well, that's pretty cool. I think we should do that.
Yeah, well, all you need is to put down your guns and pick up a shovel.
Just become capitalists like us, dude.
Yes.
Get out of this commie stuff. Yeah. You know, it's no fun.
Sounds like China.
You don't have any food. You know, you don't have any girls. Come on. You know,
Look at the people just to the south of you.
Yeah. South Korea is a booming.
Oh, sure. Boom. And has been for a long time.
Yeah.
So North Korea's got to be looking across the border with envy, and it's probably one of the reasons why they don't have an internet in North Korea. They have an intranet.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's like a government repository of information, and you're allowed to access that, but you can't access outside of that.
Oh, and really? So, like, you go to North Korea, you can't Google and look at porn and stuff like that?
No, goodness, no. Huh. The only thing you have, you have interconnected computers, but it's an intranet.
Intranet, I didn't know.
Meaning only the stuff that's been approved in Korea by the Koreans, North Korea.
Well, that's the same thing we have here.
But not officially.
Sorry.
But, yes, no.
Wait a minute.
I get it.
Sorry. No. I didn't, you know, I couldn't help it. Mm-hmm. You know, I wonder about, you know, man. Sometimes
I think the concern of a young man like Mr. Kim is, you know, if
what's going on here?
If these guys get to my people, I'm in trouble, and
they're going to eventually get there.
They're going to eventually get to them.
Right. With satellites and all that.
Whatever, Radio Free America, you know, the whole thing. So, I think it was a very successful trip for Mr. Trump in that He forged a relationship with a younger man who needs, he desperately needs a role model. He desperately does. And if Mr. Trump is his father figure, well, then go.
You know. You know, don't you think it's hilarious? I remember in the 80s, Ronald Reagan was out there calling Russia the evil empire. And you guys are bad. And then he got really slammed for that.
Oh, sure.
Now President Trump's out there saying we should be friends with Russia and has dinner with Mr. Kim, and then they get slams for that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
The globalists, they just don't quit.
I watched the signing ceremony. Did you see it?
No, I didn't.
So Bob Acosta from CNN, while the president is actually signing this document with Mr. Kim, he's hollering questions to him like he's at a press gaggle or something.
No kidding.
That guy's got to go, man. This favoritism in the media has to stop. It really does. We need true reporters for a change. Whew. Now, I don't think it's been more revealed than it is now, but unbiased reporters. I'm good with editorials that go one way or the other, like this is an editorial show and I'm an editorial person and all of this is my opinion or I'm good with that, you know, but don't pass yourself off as a journalist when you're so biased that you can't even be quiet while the man is signing a very important historic document. Very rude.
Yeah, you can understand why the president's angry. I mean, no matter what, if you support. I mean, no respect. It's just not even.
I admire his restraint. I don't know that I could do it.
Well, I wouldn't know. I'd be punching him in the nose.
Yeah, the retaliatory action that he could take as president would be stunning. And it's almost like they're baiting him. They want him to do this, but. The bias is palpable.
Palpable. Well, of course, it works on both ends. I mean, they could cut him off and not even do press conferences or anything.
Sure.
I guess.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Of course, CNN only has a million viewers, so who cares? Alex Jones has more viewers than CNN. For God's sake, jeez. I know.
Go, Alex.
It's like, I think he does. He's got some more viewers than some of these cable companies.
That's true. Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
He needs more allies in the battle. That's for sure. And it's really slanted hard against him right now.
I think we should send him some Kava Kava and some Prozac, and he'd be fine.
Well, I think everyone should remember that tomorrow is the president's birthday.
Really?
He turned 72.
Oh.
And
he's just a kid.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I wish I had his energy. It's, you know, he's 72 years old. He's a definite inspiration.
Yeah, he's doing pretty good. 888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. This is from Jess. What's your opinion on why the Democrats demonize Russia and Putin, given the fact that China looks to be much more of a threat to the U.S.? The mainstream media never talks about China. Did they focus on Russia because they're busy taking money from China and they want people to look the other way? I can't figure it out. Thank you. No.
You just did figure it out.
So
that's
it.
Yeah, that's it. You know, the Chinese are very liberal with their largesse. And which way it flows really has a great impact on life for these politicians and the media.
So the globalists don't like the Putins because he's out there talking to Iran, doing deals with Iran for rubles and
he's
whatever.
He's subversive.
You know, he's a subversive guy. He's taking care of his country.
That's right.
He wants his little pipeline, and the boys want their pipeline.
That's what
Syria is about.
And competing to him.
Don't get me started there.
Yeah.
So they just don't like Vladimir because he's
his own man.
He's his own dude. Yeah.
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 He does the town hall things. But he does them like random people on the street. Seriously, random people on the street. And he keeps ministers standing by when he does these nationally televised events. And people say, you know, I'm having a problem with this agency or this bureaucracy and whatever. And right on national television, Putin calls the guy and says, yeah, well, I heard about this and you better fix this and so on. And then, you know, right on TV. So all of his cabinet people know they better be standing by when he does one of these town halls. So more effective than any other leader, Putin guy has reached his people, and he reaches right to the people. Now, they talk about corrupt elections and so forth, but it seems as though, and we can't understand it, and certainly the media can't understand it, why do the people still support this guy? And the answer is because he's Russia first. And I, you know, can't argue with it. Russia first. Russia's the greatest. I would expect him to be the greatest cheerleader for Russia. Now, this morning I'm talking about the Federal Reserve and whether they're going to raise rates or not. Right. Many of the pundits are talking about, well, if they raise rates, it won't be good for India. It won't be good for China. Well, I couldn't care less whether it's good for India or good for China. Is it good for the United States? And overwhelmingly, the answer is yes. But there are those that are suggesting that the Fed should hold back and should not raise interest rates because it's going to put pressure on the rest of the world. I don't get it. Whose bank are they? Are they America's central bank or the world's central bank? See, they got ahead of themselves already. They think they're the world's central bank, which is ultimately their goal.
Well, the president was, you know, he goes to G7. Hold on, let me.
Yeah, it used to be G8.
Yeah.
Until they threw Vladimir out.
Okay, if you're on hold, stay right there. Let's finish this thought, and then we'll take this phone call. So he was, and I think the line was, we are no longer going to be the world's piggy bank.
Yeah.
Right. And they got this picture of Merkel. She's just snickering and, you know, and he just goes there and talks to these people and he just says it like, we're not going to be your piggy bank anymore.
That's it.
And I think the American people like that.
Well, sure they do. They want to talk about how Canada has such a low defense budget and still manages to have all these wonderful social programs. Well, Canada should realize that the only reason it can have such a low defense budget is because we and our military and our people and our resources are pledged to protect them. So, come on.
Boy, people show a little gratitude. How much money we the people give to all these countries.
And not directly. I know they can say direct foreign aid is a very small percentage of what we spend.
Yeah, but you know, it gets there.
But this type, where we're footing the bill for all this defense and not getting any...
It comes out of our
no
paycheck.
Return.
It's maddening. Yeah. 28,000 troops in between North and South Korea since 1950.
Yeah, well, since.
I mean, what's up with that?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, especially for a country that's 6,000 years old and was so much more advanced and was a unified nation until we went in there and tore it up.
And isn't it interesting? The president says, well, we're not going to talk about that right now, but it is very expensive, and I think we should bring our boys home someday. I mean, so what if Mr. Kim really chilled out and we gave him a bunch of money and, you know, whatever, hooked him up with some chicks and he's happy and, you know, built his beaches, put a Trump Tower there, you know, on the beach in North Korea?
Emoluments from a foreign power.
You know, maybe then they could bring these 28,000 guys home and put them on the border or something.
Well, we definitely could.
I mean, you could do something with them.
Especially with unemployment rate where it is, I'm sure they could integrate themselves quickly. Into the American economy.
Well, 28,000, I mean, you could put them 100 yards apart and put one across the whole border.
Yeah.
Southern border.
I'm still torn on that. Yeah, I know you're in Texas, yeah, but, you know, I the dieharders that really want to keep those folks out, that's the purpose that they want to build the wall. Me, I'm more like, I just want to document them. That's all.
Yeah, I don't.
Build a wall, put in a gate. Yeah. You want to show up there and tell me that you're oppressed and you want to leave your country.
Just do it right.
And come to my country. Great. Yeah. Photograph, fingerprints, ID card.
Learn English.
You know, assimilate. No, come on in. Grab a shovel. Get to work. But just climb over the fence or sneak under the wall and be here without any documentation. No, that's not right. Not when I have to. I had to replace my driver's license, and I'm required to come up with birth certificate, passports, you know, all kinds of things to prove I am who I am. Well, they can just stroll in and do whatever they do without any oversight or... No, that's not how it's supposed to be. What's good for us is good for them.
Yeah, I agree. It's not about allowing people in. It's just do it right.
Mm-hmm.
And we have... I mean, come on. The government has how many 50 million workers? I mean, they can't figure out how to have a system that works, that's just efficient.
It's not hard.
They've got computers.
A wall and a gate. That's it.
Figure it out, you know.
Here's the wall.
Here's
the gate.
And you
show up. Hey, you want to come in? You want to be a? You want to assimilate into the American workforce and be American?
Sure, fine.
Hey, come on down.
Come on.
Sign up.
Because I tell you what, my experience when I had Timpone's Fresh Foods, the absolute best, most dedicated, most loyal workers in the world were people from Mexico.
Yep.
And man, we made bunches of spaghetti sauce every day. We had to do it to make a living.
Sure.
And we had lots of Hollies, Americans, white guys come in.
Hollies,
we call them. They come in and they wanted to work for us. Sure, we hired them. And they lasted about a month.
Maybe. That's been my experience,
and they are the hardest work. They were the sweetest people, and they took care of their families.
Oh.
And it was, I mean,
their
work ethic was amazing.
Yes.
And, you know, my whole business was these folks, you know?
Well, you grow to have a sense of appreciation. You know, you come to a country where all you have to do is keep your head down, put your nose to the grindstone, work. You don't have to worry about anything else. If you do what you're supposed to do, you can advance here. And where they're country, might you do what you're supposed to do, and you're going to find somebody knocking on your door asking for a bribe or a handout or some sort of payoff. And it's a different country, and they appreciate it much more than we do.
There was a fellow in 1989 who was a cousin of one of my employees that was sleeping in the car.
Mm-hmm.
I hired him. He didn't speak English to pick basil. And when I sold that company in 10 years later, he bought the, he was running the kitchen, spoke fluent English, and I sold him the salsa for a song just because to reward him for his work.
Good for you.
You know, so I mean that you know, check that.
Was his own hard work.
Oh man,
he brought him that
English when I hired him.
Yeah,
you know, he was running the place. Mm-hmm. Sharp kid, still running it today. Rosa's Salsa.
Good for him.
Isn't that great? So, I mean, that's a nice story, isn't it?
It's a success story.
That's
what America is.
That's what it is. You work hard and you figure it out. Okay, let's take this phone call. Now that we're done telling fairy tales.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning. Who's on the air here with us? Good morning.
Hi, this is Scott and Katie.
Scott and Katie, Texas. How you doing, Scott?
Yes. I felt the need to call in and correct Andrew about something. First, let me say that I don't watch CNN for the same reason I don't eat out of a cat box. But their viewership last month was actually 850,000 viewers.
Really?
So it's not looking too good for them. Actually, I'm a little concerned about CNN because if they were to go under, I mean, the airports and the TV stores wouldn't have any filler for their weather.
They could put on one radio network. We could go on it.
Okay, so quick story. My daughter did get engaged. I had to fly to Florida through Miami International Airport over the weekend.
Cool.
Okay, terrible thing, right? Congratulations, Cynthia, daughter number four. Anyway, I'm walking through Miami International Airport, a domestic flight, and trying to talk to people. And my wife turns to me and says, "I feel like I'm in a foreign land." I don't know where I was. And CNN was on every single TV screen in that airport. So, yeah, I wonder what they'll do for filler.
Okay, guys, love the show. Just thought I'd snipe that, okay?
That was a good one, Scott.
See,
Thank
thought
you.
It was a million viewers, only 850,000.
It's only 850, yeah.
It's only 850, yeah. The Drudge gets about 11 million a month. InfoWars, about 3.5 million. But, yeah, CNN, it's not doing too great.
InfoWars, does Alex Jones have 3.5 million a month?
Yes, he does.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Man.
Go, Alex.
That's amazing. Thanks, Scott.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Boy, that's a story, isn't it?
That is a story.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I remember growing up, in I guess in the 80s in Austin. In the 80s, Alex Jones would come on cable TV on the weekends, where they have these access stations.
Yeah.
And he'd sit there in his T-shirt, and he would just rant.
Rant.
He would just rant. And that's how he started.
That's right.
That's how he started. I mean, love him or lie, you know, or dislike him or, you know.
No, whatever. I got to love him because of his chutzpah. He's a showman of the best variety.
Showbiz, you know.
Sensationalism, of course, is part of his shtick. And, yeah, will he paint it a little worse than it is?
Maybe.
But does he attract a following? Yes, he does. It just shows how hungry Americans are for something other than the pablum. That was a great line, Scott. I don't watch CNN for the same reason that I don't eat out of the litter box. That's pretty good.
God, boy. I remember when CNN was like the...
It was it.
Remember, how did it start? It was the...
Ted Turner.
Ted Turner, right. Yeah. Remember they used to have that guy with the deep voice go, CNN, and it
yeah,
was like
was,
the first...
That was James Earl Jones. Yeah, that was
first 24-hour news station.
Yes.
What was it, in the 80s, right?
Yeah, it was in the 80s, like 85, 6, like that, yeah.
Man, did they...
And they had a great reputation.
Yeah.
And they trashed it in the name of partisan politics. Mm-hmm. So much so, last election, they were deridingly called the Clinton News Network.
The Clinton News Network.
Yeah, goodness.
888-663-6386 email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Well, you've been talking about inflation, which is it's kind of buzzing along.
If you don't see
along,
it now, if you don't see it now, you're not really looking.
Kind of buzzing along. Mm-hmm. I think the number, what is it?
We got producer prices and
May was
prices.
The highest in the last six years.
6 years, right? Yeah.
So talk a little bit about that. What's this mean to us?
Well, what it means is higher prices. Now, hopefully we'll couple that with higher wages for a change. We had plenty of the stagflation where prices were rising, but wages were stagnant. So I hope we get a little wage inflation as well. That, of course, is kind of part of the price to pay for this recovery. We've definitely had the engine governor on for the better part of a decade, maybe two.
Since 2008, right?
Yeah. So, since before that, we were hampering the economy with regulation and expecting our companies to compete with foreign corporations that had no regulation on them whatsoever. And maybe we lifted the rest of the world for a minute, but now the pendulum has swung. And I hope Americans are back to thinking about Americans again. And in the 50s, 60s, 70s, it was all about, you know, jobs and wages and the economy. And we tended to send our focus in another direction.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think it's coming back to the things that matter to most American families, which is, you know.
My kids.
How you doing?
Yeah.
How you doing? Are you better off than you were a year ago? Well, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are, well, then you know what to do. I can't say that you should vote for a Republican, but if the Democrats take control of the House, I do believe they will impeach this president. I do believe they will.
And then that'll just be a waste of 2 years, right?
It sure will.
Yeah. So is it true that 2.2% is inflation went up year over year? Is that true?
That's what they tell us.
That's a lot, but... It doesn't
include... Well, the Fed's inflation target is 2%.
But it doesn't include food and energy. And because I understand that, because no one eats or drives a car or uses their air conditioner, so I can understand why that wouldn't include that.
Yeah. Let's exclude that.
That's funny.
Those things aren't important.
These guys are hilarious.
They are.
Tell folks about this. So this is the Consumer Price Index.
Yeah, the CPI and other fairy tales.
And it is a fairy tale because there's no energy or food.
Well, hey, Uncle Sam cooks the books, in case you didn't
know.
When did they do that? Well, they've been doing it for so long. I wrote Uncle Sam Cooks the Books in 2003, That's already 15 years they've been doing it.
Well,
and they had been doing it for 15 years before that. It all started with the oil crisis. So in order to hide the inflation and not report it to you, they simply adjusted the figures. They said, well, if the price of coffee rises, as it did, then Americans will start drinking tea. If the price of gas rises, well, then they'll start taking the bus. And so by adjusting the numbers, we figure 200,000 Americans are going to start drinking tea. So we can adjust the price rise by saying it didn't rise that much because this many people stopped using it.
Do they mainly do the CPI cooking the books because that is what controls... The increase
Call
in people's
us.
Social yeah. security?
Yeah.
Is that why they mainly do it?
Yes. The cost of living adjustments were really brutal. And so if they reported the true number.
So you get 2 or 3% raise, which they wouldn't. Yeah. That'd blow the whole thing up worse than it's blown up already.
That's right. It's bad enough, but that would make it much, much worse. Of course, it wouldn't be worse for the poor Social Security recipient who's trying to make the ends meet and they keep moving the ends. So it is indeed fair. But they can't see it that way because it would be so expensive.
I always like to read the headlines. I actually put a thing on Facebook and I saw you comment it, where Simon Black. Now here is Simon Black. He's a sovereignman.com. Right? Mm-hmm, he's supposed to be like one of us.
Yeah.
He's a sovereign guy.
Oh, yeah.
He lives in Chile or something, and he's always talking about the Fed and all this stuff. So here's what he says. It's official. Medicare Trust Fund will run out of money in 8 years. I put that on my Facebook saying, Sovereign Man, they don't have a trust fund.
Yeah.
These people don't get it, man.
I loved your editorial there. That was spot on, Patrick, because that is
the truth. Lucky. Well, I hang out with you. That's the only reason I got spot on.
Now, I used to talk about the shoebox. You remember the shoebox?
Yeah. Tell the shoebox story.
Here's a way that you could save your entire paycheck for your retirement. You got to get a shoebox.
Yeah.
And you mark the shoebox retirement.
Retirement.
And when you get your paycheck on Friday, cash it.
Yeah.
And put all of the cash in the shoebox.
Oh, good.
All of it. Every penny. Right. But of course, you're going to need gas and maybe food. So you take what you need out of the box, but you put an IOU in there.
Oh, like I owe you 20 bucks when you take 20 bucks.
Yeah, okay. Take 20 bucks, you put in an IOU 20 bucks.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so if you do that and continue to your whole life, by the time you're ready to retire, you'll have saved all of your money.
Great.
Unfortunately, it'll all be in the form of IOUs.
Oops.
And that's the way that our Social Security Trust Fund operates. So the federal government takes every surplus dollar it has since 1967, borrows it at a ridiculously low rate of interest.
Like pretty low. Like
less than 1%.
Like 0.5%.
Yeah, nothing. And they borrow the money, they spend it on things that you wouldn't approve of, otherwise they would just put it in a regular appropriation, and then put the IOU in the box. And this was Al Gore talked about the lockbox.
I remember, remember that.
The idea that we're going to somehow lock this up and not let any access to it be allowed. But they failed miserably to the point that now, every single month, billions of dollars have to come out of the Treasury and repay those IOUs in order to fund Social Security today, not 6 years from now or today.
So there's absolutely no real spendable liquid cash in these
non-marketable securities.
There's nothing there.
Nothing.
So when they say Social Security is going to run out in 2025 and all this, like,
they're figuring we're going to pay back all the IOUs, then it'll run out.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen.
Well, Paul Ryan, of course, is talking about we need to control these entitlements, as though somehow the government is giving you something. You know, if you just kept your Social
Security. Came out of our check.
That's right.
Last time I checked.
For years and years and years and years.
Yeah.
And instead of putting the money in a trust fund, and when I did Uncle Sam Cooks the Books, I did talk about that the word trust fund, when used in this context, is not the same as the general accepted meaning. So I went
to, you think?
If you think there's money in a trust fund, that's not the case. It's a different meaning. So that's why the words of art are very important. There is, in fact, a Social Security Trust Fund. There are trustees. But the contents of the Social Security Trust Fund are mere IOUs. They're not marketable securities in that Social Security could say, we're just going to sell these to investors and let them know.
These are just IOUs.
Non-marketable securities, unregistered bonded debt. It's the worst that it could possibly be.
It's no different than you saying I owe you $100 and put it in your shoebox.
Yeah. Here's another little analogy. So Dad said, son, you're going to have to start working and putting money away for college. So it happens for 13, 14, 15. I mow a lawn, $2. Here, Dad, here's the $2. And he's going to hold it for me. I'm using my air quotes. He's going to hold it for me. Now it's time to go to college. And I look at my little dad passbook and I say, well, Dad, I've given you $5,800 over the last 4 years. And I need that now to go to college. So Dad says, well, I'll be able to give you the $5,800, but I honestly spent it. And so now he starts paying me back. But as you would expect from Dad, hey, Dad, I could use $20 for pizza. No, I can't. I got to pay you back. So none of the extra help that I would have counted on is provided because Dad borrowed all the money and spent it on family expenses. And now the family is struggling as Dad is paying back what he borrowed. This is This is the American Social Security Trust Fund, folks.
And this started, I believe, with 1967. With LBJ, right?
Yeah, the Unified Budget.
Unified Budget. Fancy way of saying we're just going to move
it
over here.
We're just going to borrow this money.
We're going to borrow this.
We're going to borrow. Don't worry, we'll pay it back. Chuck Rangel said to me with the most most sincere voice, well, who else is a better investment than the United States? What's a better investment than the giving your money to the Treasury? Who's better? What could be better than that?
This must be one of the big concerns, I'm just theorizing here, Andrew, with the globalist and Mr. Trump, the president, thinking that what if he would really start talking about this stuff very clearly someday? This would not be good.
No.
Right. I mean, if he really explained that, could you imagine just saying what you said just now, the last 5 minutes, on nationwide TV on a press conference?
Yeah.
The American people would just go, what? Because they don't know this stuff.
No, they do not.
They don't have any clue.
Henry Ford.
Not a clue.
You remember Henry?
Henry Ford.
He had hemp in his cars.
He made hemp cars.
He made them them out of hemp.
He made out of hemp.
But he made them to run on hemp, too.
Did he really?
Yeah, he did.
I thought he just made the fenders out of hemp.
Well, that and he made them to run.
Henry was pretty up in his game.
He was. Yeah. So I think he said, if the American people understood the rank injustice of the monetary system, they would be rioting before morning. Paraphrase.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the reality of it. He knew.
People knew.
Yeah, people knew. If they understood, well, they would be rioting, no question about it. So I think they'll do everything to prevent them from finding out. Oh, that's the money system. You know what? That's way too hard to understand. Just go do your work, get your Federal Reserve notes, put them in the bank.
Sylvia writes in, what are Andy's thoughts on statement made by Dave Janda on USA Watchdog? Debt-based financial system is headed for a reset, and the reset will not only reset the debt, but clear out corruption and restore the rule of law. President Donald Trump will preside over the largest bankruptcy in the history, will involve escalating the price of gold and silver.
Yeah, he must be a gold and silver salesman.
Probably.
No, obviously, if there is any kind of a reset.
What does that mean?
Well, it just means, you had
$100.
Yeah, you had $100 in the bank, now you have a dollar. And this is the new standard.
No, you can't do that. Well, they'd be bombing the White House.
Wiping out debt. So it's kind of like we're going to repay everything that's owed, but we're going to pay it 30 cents on the dollar. Sort of like where we were heading in 2008. An absolute monetary mess. And would require some type of a new standard to go along with it. I don't see it as a possibility. I wish that it would happen, but
there's people out there, Jim Willey, this fellow Dave Janda, talking about this idea.
Global reset.
But it's really just a theory that you don't see any substance to it at all.
No. In fact, we talked about the Swiss, right? They were going to adopt the Chicago plan that Irving Fisher laid out back in 28.
Oh, yeah. They voted that down.
No, sure. Yeah, the Swiss.
So here's what they're talking about. The Swiss had a sovereign money referendum, which I don't even know where that name came from. But the idea, wasn't it, Andrew, that they were going to vote saying that all these commercial banks can no longer create
loan money they don't have,
create mortgages.
Everything's got to be covered by 100% reserves.
Yeah.
So, and if the banks need money in order to accomplish that, they have to turn to the Swiss central bank and borrow it at interest. So it's essentially saying, give us, like, remember Ross Perot? You think that's such a great deal? Well, then we'll take that deal. Give us your deal and you take our deal. That's what we would be doing to the central bank and to the owners of the central bank, which is essentially, instead of us borrowing money from you at interest, you have to borrow it from us at interest. So you need to keep, if people say they have $1 million in your bank, you need $1 million sitting in your bank. And if you need more money to speculate or do whatever you do, you have to borrow it from the bank that we own, the Swiss Central Bank. In that system, the bank, the national bank, is the wellspring of money.
So I didn't even understand what was the reasoning behind this referendum?
Why were they asking the people? Well, yeah. they were trying to literally straighten out their monetary system. You know, they were the last to abandon the gold standard only because of the pressure put on by the rest of the world and Dollar Inc.
Yeah, how long ago were they on the gold standard, Switzerland?
It's been a while.
Yeah. So, but 30. What does it matter if the central bank creates the money or if the Bank of Dripping Springs does?
Interest.
To the Swiss?
Interest.
What do you mean interest?
So, well, let's look at it the way it is now.
Okay.
So if the government needs money that it doesn't have,
yeah.
it has to borrow it from the central bank at interest.
Correct.
Where does the central bank get it? It creates it.
Right.
So with the Swiss referendum and the Irving plan and the Chicago plan, as it's known widely, if you want to Google it, look it up, it was simply that the power to create money resides in the treasury. And if the central bank needs money that it doesn't have, it has to borrow the money from the treasury at interest.
You mean this referendum was about that?
That's what it was about.
No,
yes,
was it? I thought it was sovereign money is an initiative that would give the country's central bank sole control over creating
over the
money.
Issuance of money, yeah.
Well, simple. The central bank is separate from the treasury.
Well, no, the Swiss central bank is separate but owned, so it is a sovereign entity, yeah.
So they were actually going to do Andrew Jackson thing.
Yeah, yeah, no more fractional reserve.
And they voted this down?
They voted it, people voted it down.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was George Soros in there stuffing the votes or something?
I bet there was a heavy influence.
You think?
Yeah.
Wow. So I didn't know it was that cool. See, I missed the point that the Treasury of Switzerland actually owns the central bank.
Yeah.
Is that so it's different than here?
Yeah, it's slightly different. But the commercial banks still have the power through fractional reserve banking, mm-hmm. as we've talked about many times, to create money. Mm-hmm. They do so by just loaning the liability, if you will, or loaning the credit. So it is, if the listeners are more interested, yeah. or the Chicago Plan or Irving Fisher, 1928, 29 maybe, he was unfortunate at his timing in releasing this Chicago Plan.
Which is the idea that just let the Treasury create the money.
Yeah, Treasury creates money and the central bank is free to borrow it from the Treasury if it needs to or wants to. And it pays interest to the Treasury. And so in that regard, the
franchise... We would be the creditors,
yeah,
we the people.
Right.
I mean, I like that.
That's what makes it sovereign, right?
Oh, that's what makes it sovereign.
Yeah.
Okay, 888-663-6386, email Patrick at oneradionetwork.com. I can remember when I couldn't even pronounce Ho Chi Wu. Previously, with our friend Brandon Amalani of Shen Blossom.
A good example of this also is like the Ho Chi Wu formula. Hmm. That is, that's a new one that came out. It's really good because it's a blood builder. A lot of people don't understand that Ho Chi Wu is actually toxic if it's not prepared correctly. So I wanted to come out with one that not only features the Ho Chi Wu as the king herb in the formula, but it's prepared of a minimum of 14 days. Usually we try and get 20, 21 days of cooking it. So you can think of it as like it's in a slow cooker with black beans. Huh. And it's basically just cooking down and deactivating some of those liver toxic compounds. So we do use that as like the bulk of the formula, but we basically put a lot of like mature ginseng root, like in our root extract. We have the fermented and hydrolyzed pearl powder, reishi stem. And it's got Shu Di Hong, which is like a Romania type family. We got both the prepared warm stuff and then the cool stuff to kind of balance it out in a sense so it doesn't become sticky. If you get a good quality Ho Chi Wu that's properly prepared, it definitely has some invigorating qualities to it and makes you feel relaxed, but yet fully vigorous and energized.
Now, that's the kind of Ho Chi Wu that you would like, right? Really nice products, as you can hear. If you'd like to order Ho Chi Wu or the other products, click on Shen Blossom right there on the front page. OneRadioNetwork.com. We had a kind of a poor design in my bathroom-bedroom combination there, and there was a closet. And so you take a shower, and, humidity. And this closet just got a bunch of big box of books moldy, and I found those about 3 or 4 years ago, threw them all out, and was doing all kinds of stuff, spraying hydrogen peroxide and never could get the moldy smell out of the closet. And if you smell kind of moldy, even if you don't see it, it's not good. And you smell it gets in your lungs. And this hidden mold stuff could be like the worst ever. And we're really thinking that it's a huge, huge deal in America, around the world. And places like China that make this gypsum board stuff, they don't even use it. They use a magnesium oxide that doesn't mold. But that's another story. So I got turned on with Wayne Blakely and Living Streams Mission and was selling all of his products in our store. He has a product called Mold Relief. You buy this little fogger, you dilute it 7-1, it does 8,000 square feet. You can spray all of your sheetrock and it'll inhibit any kind of mold happening, anything for about 2 or 3 years. I did the closet, all the smell went away immediately, well, 20 minutes later, and it came back like about 2 days later. And I did it again, and now it's done. It hasn't come back. So this is a really interesting product. I nebulized some of it. I don't recommend that. I did it. I did it. You know, in the nebulizer, 7-1, and I had flu symptoms all night long. I actually had chills, and so there was getting some mold out of my lungs, which evidently Doodle and I have had for a long time because there was some mold going on. And this mold kind of flies around. We know. I just saw where Warren Buffett made $2 billion by selling all of the stock that he bought from USG, which is a company that makes all of the sheetrock for the United States, and they claim that it doesn't mold. Well, it's a false claim. People that study this stuff, all sheetrock will mold, and this is a great thing that you might do. You can use Andrew's terms, palpable. You can feel it. I've done my home, and I'm doing the whole thing over again, and I'm pretty excited about it. This is Mold Relief on One Radio Network. You can see it. And then look in Living Streams. And if you'd like to try some of these probiotics, they all are special probiotics that Wayne grows himself and feeds stuff. And you know how he does it. And then he puts different nutrients in it, like this moss and stuff like that in the mold. So I would recommend that people are emailing me, what should I try? I would do the Living Streams probiotic, the Living Streams multi-blend, and then the Bifido. And these are Bifidos that are only with the human DNA. A lot of these things you get with just probiotics, they're not even meant for humans. I mean, this is such a fascinating subject to me. 80% of the immune system is in our gut. The other 20% is in our spinal fluid, like we learned on Monday from Dr. Olry. This is where it all happens, and it's all with bacteria. It's all with bacteria. That's everything. These little buggies do it all. And when these little buggies are not happening, this is how people get a weakened immune system. And if you get a virus or a bacteria that your gut bacteria cannot deal with because you have antibiotics or been eating moo cows with antibiotics, then the body will create antibodies to save you from dying. And when you create antibodies, that's the body's defense system to keep you alive. But it takes a tremendous amount of energy, says Wayne Blakely, tremendous amount of energy to make these antibodies. And this is what the whole vaccine thing is built on, which is just a backup system to keep you alive. And that's why most people, and you might be one of them, are tired a lot, because you don't have the good guys in your gut, in your small intestine, your large intestine, to make the immune system. So your body's having to create antibodies to fight off anything that you pull in. And it takes a huge amount of energy. This is not the way it's set up to be. 80% in the gut. These are amazing products. They're Living Streams, multi-blend, Living Streams. These are the two I would start with. Living Streams multi-blend, the Bifido, and the Living Streams minerals. You do those three. I would start with those. And then you just, you know, email me in about 2 or 3 weeks and let me know how you're doing with those. It's in our store, the Mold Relief, and all these products on OneRadioNetwork.com. Previously, when we were talking with Adam Bergstrom,
I had abscess here a few nights ago, and Vibrant Gal said, take some aloe. And I said, for this? I mean, my eye is hurting, and I can't smile. I took the aloe. I woke up in the morning completely gone. That's not supposed to happen unless you have antibiotics, and antibiotics don't even work that quickly. So I'm a big fan of aloe. Guess what? The medical doctors are trying to say it's carcinogenic, but that's because they have a competing drug and they don't want people to just go grow an aloe plant, for heaven's sake. They want them to take the expensive drug. And that's when all that cancer nonsense came out.
You know, I keep talking about the aloe that we were promoting, and I love this product that comes in fresh. I keep talking about it, the benefits for the small intestine, large intestine, the gut and everything, but it must have some really good immune properties if it worked on your tooth.
It does, and remember, we're taught that the focal infection affects the whole body from the mouth, but it's actually the colon first, and then the mouth, and then it distributes.
The Stockton Aloe-1 on the front page of One Radio Network. You can get yourself a couple half gallons of fresh, frozen, nothing else aloe, and boy, this is the way to go. I mean, it takes many, many aloe plants to get enough aloe for just one bottle. Check it out right on the front page, Stockton Aloe, front page under the slideshow, oneradionetwork.com. We talked to Michael yesterday. He has two new products that I consider if you're looking for a greens product. Boy, this looks great. It's called IA Greens, and it's on the same aloe link, and also a Light Pro vegan powder, protein powder, which is made from pea protein and brown rice, and they've got some herbs in there, and suma root, sachi inchi powder, vanilla, and so this is a great protein powder too at a really, really good price. So if you're looking for protein powder or a greens mix, you might want to check this out. So this is all on the aloe link. I just got my 4 gallons in a few days ago of half gallons of the aloe, and I'm loving it. I really, really love it. This is all in the Stockton Aloe one on OneRadioNetwork.com.
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Andrew Goss is with us. He's a currency historian. Andrew buys and sells gold coins for a living. That's how he makes his house payments and supports his daughter when they have weddings. And he has a lot of daughters, and they keep getting married. So, you know, this will, you got to.
Very funny, Patrick.
I know. Well, that's the thing when you're a dad.
Yeah.
And you know,
if you take it seriously.
Well, I know you did. I went to one daughter's wedding, and you took it very seriously.
That's right.
My goodness. Yeah. That didn't cost you any Federal Reserve notes, did it?
No, not at all.
Hey, God, love you.
I tell my couch story. The wife, when Dee Dee was born, they wanted to buy a new living room outfit. And I said, but no, I want to buy this proof $3 gold piece. And so we argued a bit. And then I tried to point out, you know, using money to be productive as opposed to consumptive, which I viewed a couch set, especially with the kids, you know. You're going to buy something nice for the living room. They're going to spill milk on it. So why don't we just buy the gold coin and forget about it? Well, no, argue. I was in the doghouse for quite a while after I bought the coin and not the living room set. Fast forward 30 years, time for the wedding. And how are we going to pay for this wedding? Well, no problem. I'll just sell that proof coin. Oh, goodness. What's it worth? Well, enough to pay for the wedding now. She says. You ready?
Yeah.
Why didn't you buy more of those? Oh, my.
That's hilarious.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Well, you know, there's some people out there that are really talking about more and more that gold is about to make some kind of moves. So
yeah,
how does this affect your company? Now, you do numismatic coins.
Rare coins.
Rare coins. So most of what you sell is the value is in the collectible.
Correct.
So if we see gold go 1500, 1600, 1700 or so, what does that do to your business? How does that affect your business?
Well, it certainly changes the perception, you know, the attitude.
Where
of
people
want to
buy because gold's going up, right?
And so those that have the means want to buy the best. They always do the best and the rarest. And so the psychology, the numismatic coins tend to outperform just the straight gold bars and blocks, et cetera, by 2 to 1, sometimes 3 to 1. So for me, numismatics are the way to go. For a great many people, they prefer semi-numismatic coins where the bulk of the value is in the gold. And in periods of rapidly rising gold prices, the semi-numismatics actually outperform the numismatic coins. Because obviously, if gold goes up, you got a 1 ounce gold coin that, you know, the bulk of the value is in the gold. Gold goes up, it goes up. So it'll outperform a numismatic coin in that brief period. But over the long term, like 30 years, you'll see numismatic coins outperform. And you don't have these wild fluctuations that you might have in the gold market. So I like numismatic coins. You may too. If you want to get more information about these things, you can call 800-468-2646. At least learn about it so that when the time comes and you decide maybe you do want some, you won't have to start at ground zero. Establish a relationship, learn the market, how it works, how you get in, how you get out, etc. And we'd be happy to help you with that. 800-468-2646.